Good morning, Hope. My name is Clay. I'm one of the pastors here. I'm excited to open up God's Word for us today as we continue in our series, The Quest for a King. I want to start out with a story from Lucy and I's dating days. And so when we started out dating, and she's living in the city of Chicago, and I'm living in the suburbs, and so there's still some distance between us. So we didn't get to spend that much time together. We did a whole lot of talking on the phone, back and forth. But as we tried to like see each other once a week or so, and as our relationship went on, I began to notice something. I began to notice that Lucy had a whole lot of friends that were dudes. And she, not only were they her friends, but she like talked to them on the phone and she would go like hang out with them. And I began to experience this weird feeling. A feeling I wasn't used to, that it was like, what is going on inside of me here? And it's like, I think I'm jealous. Yeah, I think I'm jealous. Now Lucy wasn't doing anything wrong. We were pretty early on in our dating relationship. There was nothing wrong with her continuing to invest in the friendships that she had. But you know, I was really digging her then, and so as my attachment grew, I began to worry: is somebody going to come in and swipe her away? I mean, like, these other guys are pretty cool. And I've since gotten to know them, and I was right, they are pretty cool. I'm really surprised she didn't end up dating one of them. But somehow she stuck it out with me, and now as our relationship has gone on, those relationships have changed. But I began to have this feeling of jealousy. What we sometimes refer to as the green-eyed monster was rearing its head, because I was afraid that somebody else was going to take what I perceived what was rightfully mine, namely my girlfriend. And we use the word jealousy in a lot of different ways, so I just want to clarify how I'm going to use it today. When I say jealousy, what I'm referring to is a hostility toward another arising from the threat of losing what's perceived to be rightfully yours. So what jealousy is it's this feeling that comes within us when we think somebody is trying to take what's mine. So somebody's trying to take what's mine, and I do not want them to, and so I'm hostile towards them. Like, I no longer have a positive relationship toward that person who's trying to take the thing that is mine. I see this in my children already. When one of them comes up and tries to take a toy that is rightfully, like, you know, there's like, wait a minute, that's my toy, and their relationship is then not right. And I want to clarify something before we dive into our text today, and that is that jealousy is not always a bad thing. Jealousy is not always a bad thing. Jealousy can be a holy thing. If we go back to Exodus 20, we see God says, "Don't worship any other gods besides me, because I am a jealous God." God says he is a jealous God. And that's good, and that's holy, and that's right. What that means is that when somebody comes along, be it an idol or another nation or another person, and tries to take away somebody who is rightfully God's child, God gets upset. God's not happy about it, and that's a good thing, because God's children are rightfully his. And when we are hostile towards someone who tries to take away what's rightfully ours, that's not a sinful thing. Now, there's some clarifications there. There's some clarifications there, because jealousy can, while it can be a holy thing, it can also be an unholy thing. We can go to Galatians 5:26, where it says, get rid of jealousy. Like, don't let it be a part of your life. And it's referring to the sinful part of jealousy. You see, we can be jealous for things or people that aren't rightfully ours. When that happens, when we perceive them to be ours, but they're not actually ours, and then we're hostile towards someone for trying to take, then that's sinful jealousy. That's a misplaced jealousy. Or when our level of hostility outweighs the actual threat against us. You know, sometimes I might get like super jealous in our dating situation when there was really no threat that was there. And yet my hostility was probably greater than the actual threat. And there's other times when whatever we say it's rightfully ours, but it's probably not rightfully ours. We're meant to share it. And yet we're jealous when we ought not to be, and our jealousy becomes sin. And so I know that it can get fuzzy at times. I know that it can be hard to discern, is this a holy jealousy or is this an unholy jealousy? And I don't have all the answers for that, I'm sorry. But we're going to see some things from our text this morning that will hopefully help us to see how destructive unholy jealousy can be, and then what we can do to guard against it in our lives. If you remember back to last week, if you were here, David just slew Goliath. The shepherd boy took down the 9'9" tall giant. The king was sitting there watching, and you can start to see where this is probably not going to go well. I mean, on the one hand, there's going to be people that are happy for David's success, but there are going to be other people that aren't too thrilled with David's success, and I think that that's probably true in a lot of life. Sometimes when somebody is successful, our instinct is to be like, wow, they are awesome, way to go. And other times, our instinct is to immediately try to tear them down. Like, don't we see that in the world today? Sometimes somebody who we don't want to be successful is successful, and we feel the urge to point out all their faults, to try to take their success from them, because there's some sinful part in us that desires to destroy someone else. Well, let's peek in on Saul and David and see what's going on right now. Well, after David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan, who's Saul's firstborn son, became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. So already, David's the war hero. He's getting in good with the king's family. The king's son is now his best friend. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan, you think maybe Jonathan would see David and Saul being like, oh man, I bet David's going to become Saul's favorite son. You know, look what he did. And if you're Jonathan, you could be thinking, I can't live up to that. I'm supposed to be the next king, right? I can't compete with David. And you might think that Jonathan, his instinct would be, how can I take care of this guy? I don't want Dad to love him more than he loves me. And yet what we see instead is Jonathan's like, wow, look what David did. I want to be his friend. Not only that, he takes it a step further and says, Jonathan took off his robe, off the robe he was wearing, and gave it to David along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. What we see Jonathan doing here, and we might not notice it just from a casual reading of the text, but he's saying, David, I'm not supposed to be Saul's successor. I'm not supposed to be the next king. Here is my royal robe. It's yours now. Jonathan isn't clinging to this idea that he's supposed to be the next king. Rather, he recognizes God's call in David's life. And rather than trying to compete with God's call on David's life, Jonathan says, he acknowledges it and says, no, that's yours, bro. Let me support you in that mission. I'm not going to be your competition. I'm not going to try to fight you here. God has called you, and you go for it. Like, that is an amazing example of how a relationship ought to go. And yet there's another relationship that's not going to go as it ought to go. So let's keep going. Verse 5 says, whatever mission Saul sent him on, David was so successful that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. And this pleased all of the troops and Saul's officers as well. So everything's going well for David. You know, Saul's recognizing his battle prowess, so he's giving him more and more responsibility. The troops are happy about it. Everybody's happy. David's success is great. Until this happens. When the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs and with timbrels and lyres. And you're thinking, this sounds pretty good. Like, the army has just won a great battle. People are coming out to sing and dance and celebrate the king. Only look at the words that they are singing. As they danced, they sang, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands. And you're the king. And you're like, wait a minute here. What's going on? I'm supposed to be the hero in the song. Now Saul should know his Hebrew poetry better. To be a lot of times there's just parallelism. It's just saying, like, overall, Saul and David, they killed a lot of enemies. They did well in battle, and yet Saul's looking and saying, why am I on the line with only 1,000? And David is on the line with 10,000. I don't think I like this. Well, Saul was very angry. Let's change the song. This refrain displeased him greatly. He says that they credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but me only with thousands? What more can he get but the kingdom? And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David, and so the roots of jealousy are starting to take shape. Now, it's nothing especially grievous at this time. It's just he's keeping an eye on David. You're thinking, this guy might be a threat to what I perceive to be as mine. And namely, there's two things I want to point out here just right away. And that's that Saul was jealous for praise. He hears people praising David in a way that's greater than they're praising him. And he's like, this is not good. I cannot handle this. Maybe you heard your boss give a fellow coworker some praise, and you're like, wait a minute, like, I do a way better job than she does. How come she's getting praise? The boss never says that to me. And you start to think, how come he or she is getting what I deserve? That's supposed to be mine. That praise is supposed to be mine. I don't want to share it. Like, we yell at our kids for not sharing well, and the reality is none of us share well. And praise is one of those things that it is hard to share, and sometimes we'll hear somebody give a compliment to somebody else, and we'll think, why don't I get more compliments? Why don't I get more praise? Why do they think so highly of them and not of me? And the sin of jealousy starts to corrupt us. And then not only in this verse do we have Saul's jealousy for praise, but also he's jealous for position. Now this one's a little fuzzier in the sense of he says he's worried. What's next? Is David, what could be next except besides him becoming king? Now, I don't know if you know this about kings, but kings don't like to give up their power. It's a little known fact. Okay, so it's a well-known fact. Kings don't like to give up their power, and if a king perceives early on that somebody else might take their power, what do they normally do? They kill them. And we act like that's a rarity. Thankfully, that doesn't take place in our country, at least not very frequently. But there are places around the world where that very much still happens. Power does not always transition peacefully. And Saul's thinking, this guy could be a threat to me. I'm going to keep my eye on him. And the reality is, yeah, he is a threat. God has already told Saul, I'm going to replace you with one of your neighbors who's better than you, with somebody who actually is after my own heart. Saul knows those things. He doesn't know that it's David, but he knows that he's not really supposed to be king anymore. And David is. And so Saul is jealous because he perceives the kingship to be rightfully his. The thing is, it's not. God has already given the kingship to David. And as a result, the jealousy that could be godly if the kingship was supposed to be his is ungodly because it's not really his. We'll see some more areas of Saul's jealousy as we continue through our passage. It says, the next day an evil spirit from God came forcefully on Saul. And most Bibles have a note there next to evil that also says harmful. I prefer the harmful translation. The word can be translated either way, but I don't think God sends evil. But sometimes things that come from God can harm us, especially if we're not right with God. And Saul, because of his disobedience, has received this spirit from God trying to force him out of the kingship. Well, it says he was prophesying in his house, and while David was playing the lyre, as he usually did. And, well, Saul had a spear in his hand. You guys sit around your house with a spear in your hand every once in a while? I don't know, maybe he's like walking around thinking, like twirling it a little bit, like, you know, yeah, let me just listen to some harp music while I have my spear in my hand. And then all of a sudden this jealousy starts to creep up, and says he hurled it, saying to himself, I'll pin David to the wall. But David eluded him twice. And you're thinking, Saul did this not just once. Didn't David know that after the first time he should probably leave? I don't know, he's like, dodge, I'm still playing the harp. Come on, try to get me. Like, Zach, that'd be a great junior high game. Give somebody a guitar, have them keep playing while the rest of them chuck spears. No, Saul's trying to kill David. That spirit of jealousy is coming out. And it says in verse 12, Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with David, but had departed from Saul. The Lord was with David, but had departed from Saul. So he sent David away from him. He gave him command over 1,000 men, and David led the troops in their campaigns. And in everything he did, he had great success because the Lord was with him. And when Saul saw how successful he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he had led them in their campaigns. Here we see another element of Saul's jealousy coming out. And I'm going to, because I want to be a good preacher and use the same letter, I'm going to say that Saul was jealous for what David possessed, for his possessions, namely his possession of the Spirit of God. He's looking at the call that God has placed on David's life and saying, that call used to be mine. I used to have the Spirit of God, but I don't have it anymore. That Spirit is supposed to be mine. I want it back. Why does David get the Spirit of God within him and I don't? And he knows the answer to that question. He disobeyed God and lost it. But he sees David's success. He sees the way that God is blessing his life with military campaign victories, by dwelling within him. And he says, this is not going to go well for me. I'm afraid that he's going to overtake me. I'm afraid that the people like him more than they like me, and they're going to want to make him king. But it's not hard to get jealous of possessions when we have something and we think that we might lose it. Sometimes even in the small things where you're afraid to loan somebody one of your tools because you think they might break it and you might lose it. And you're like, how tightly do I really need to hold on to those things? I want to jump ahead here to verse 28 intervening verses there. Saul's trying to marry off one of his daughters to David. Not because he likes David, not even because he's like, oh, here's a threat, let's bring him into the family, but because if David marries one of his daughters, there's going to be a dowry involved. And so he's like, his dowry is going to be that he has to go fight a dangerous battle for me, and then he's going to die, and he'll be taken care of for me. And David's kind of wise to this, but all that happens, and he actually completes the dangerous task with Saul's second daughter, Michal, and they get married, and here's what's going on in verses 28. It says, when Saul realized that the Lord was with David, and that his daughter Michal loved David, Saul became still more afraid of him, and he remained his enemy the rest of his days. In other words, he's already telling us there's no going back here. There's no going back. And so the Philistine commanders continued to go out to battle as often as they did. And David met with more success than the rest of Saul's officers, and his name became well known. The start of verse 19, it says, and Saul told his son Jonathan and all the attendants to kill David. But Jonathan had taken a great liking to David. Another way that we're going to see Saul's jealousy come out is in his people. He's jealous for people. He's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? My son has already has a man crush on David here. He's his best friend. He likes him more than he likes me. I can't handle that. He's supposed to hate David because I hate him, but he loves him. What's going on? And not only that, but now my daughter, who I know I gave her to David as his wife, but it wasn't supposed to work out like that, but now she actually loves him. And in the next chapter, in the rest of chapter 19, we're going to see that Saul tries to recruit Michal to help him kill David, but what she actually does is help David escape, really confirming her loyalty to David and not to him. And if we go on to chapter 20 after that, we see Jonathan do a similar thing, where Saul expects Jonathan here, Jonathan, go kill David. Instead, Jonathan says, hey, David, run away. My dad's trying to kill you. And so the people that were Saul expected to be loyal to him have now become loyal to David. And he's not happy about it. And so from this time on, David is going to run away, and he's not going to come back to Saul's service. The rest of the book of Samuel, David is going to be on the run, because his relationship with Saul has been so damaged by this jealousy. We're not going to read the rest of the text in chapters 19 and 20, but I would encourage you to read it when you get home. Read it before you go to community group so that you can interact with the whole thing. I want to just pause briefly and jump forward there. I know it's not my next slide, but go to the slide that says Sins of Desire at the top. Because I think that we can get these kind of mixed up sometimes, and even in the English language, especially the first two, we tend to use interchangeably when historically they have distinct meaning. And I think it's good to understand, and some of both of them are going on here. And let's pretend like for a second that I have a very nice bicycle, and George over there is trying to steal my bike. Right, he's got his eye on it. I can tell. It's a good looking bike. It's a nice mountain bike. We're gonna go for a nice ride. But what George, when I see him eyeing my bike, jealousy is what I feel. That's that fear that he's gonna take what's mine. Envy is what he is feeling toward me. He's looking at me thinking, I wish I had more stuff than Clay, or I wish I had that bike, and that wasn't his. How come he gets to have the bike? I deserve to have the bike, not him. So envy develops when we start to think that we don't possess what we rightly deserve, And we look at somebody else who does possess that, and we think, I'm better than them. I should have that and not them. And so that's when envy comes in. That's when envy comes in. Why do they get to have that? And sometimes we use envious in like nice, casual, non-threatening ways. Hey, like I'm envious of that shirt that you have or that you get to take that trip. And we tend to use it lightly at times. And I'm not criticizing that, but when we talk about the sin of envy, that's what we're talking about. Is that desire to, when we look at somebody else and we think, I deserve that, they don't deserve that, that should be mine. Whether that's a relationship, whether that's an item. Coveting at its heart is just it just means to desire something, to desire something strongly, to want something. And you're like, well, wait a minute, it says I'm not supposed to covet my neighbor's wife or oxen. Yes, those are two very different things, by the way. But yeah, neither of them are you supposed to covet. You see, it's not that the desire in itself is wrong. It's not wrong to want something that you don't have, not inherently. But it says don't covet. It doesn't say don't covet in the Ten Commandments, right? It says don't covet your neighbor's wife. Don't covet what is someone else's. Don't desire to have what is rightfully somebody else's. Now, there's another way in which coveting comes in as sin as well, and that's when we start to think that God hasn't given me what I deserved. And I want something so badly that I'm not going to be satisfied with God unless I have it. And my coveting, my desire for something has become sin. And so coveting is felt not necessarily toward a person, although it can be a person, but it's not toward the person who already has something. So in that situation, he would covet my bike. George, coveting goes toward and my wife told me I'm not allowed to use this, but an object, but because sometimes it's toward people, but toward a thing or person that somebody else has. And all three can delve into sin, right? I'd say envy is probably the only one that you'd say that's always sin. Envy is always sin, where there's such a thing as holy jealousy and holy coveting. All right. I'm going to go fly through these rather quickly now. What makes sins of desire so bad? One, they turn life into a competition. We're supposed to be allies with people along the way. When we experience these sins of desire, we're constantly looking at everybody else and we're seeing them as a competitor for what it is that we want. Whether that's trying to make ourselves more successful than them. And man, is that an unhealthy way to go? And as a person that really enjoys competition and has fun with it, I see the sin that can so often creep in. There's a reason why when my wife and I play games, she prefers to play the ones that are cooperative, where we're on the same team, and not the ones where we're against each other, because we're meant to be allies in life and not competitors, and that's just true. As we pursue God together and his mission together, we're not competitors, but we're allies. And these sins of desire can transform people who are supposed to be allies into competitors. And it's just not good. Number two, is that they damage relationships. If that's not already evident, when we start to look at other people and think, I want what is theirs, that should be mine, it creates distance between us and them that is hard to repair, because anger and resentment and bitterness and all of these other emotions come in as a result of that jealousy that's there in the person who's now supposed to be my ally, is my competitor, and now there's distance between us. David and Saul could have worked together, yet because of the jealousy, they were unable to do that. Thirdly, they steal away our joy. We're supposed to have joy and contentment, but whenever I look at my life and I'm not satisfied, when I feel like God hasn't given me what I deserve, he robs me of the joy that ought to be my reality, because he's given me way more than I deserve. He's blessed me with a joy that is beyond comparison in his gospel. And yet all I can think about is what I don't have. And when I start to have these sins of desire, it robs me of the joy that I've received in the gospel. And I'm not able to live the life that God has planned for me. I'm just going to read off my last one here. You can jump to the slide that has all four of them on it. all four of the remedies. Trust in God's goodness and provision, that he's given you what you need and he's given you what you're supposed to have, and he's not going to give you what somebody else is supposed to have. Quit looking at what he's given to somebody else and start focusing on just what he's called you to and what he's blessed you with. Trust that he is good and that he will take care of you. Live a life that looks to lift others up rather than push them down. Lift them up literally in doing good things for them, but lift them up in prayer anyway. If you feel like jealousy is creeping in and you're starting to hate someone else's success, try praying that they might be even more successful, as much as it hurts. Express gratitude often. There's so much value there. And lastly, find joy. Remember the gospel and find your joy within it.